Chapter 31. Hank got a job driving a Jeep that picked up balls at a combination pitch and putt driving range. The Jeep pulled a contraption that looked something like a harvester. It scooped up the balls and funneled them into large cans. He was to spend the remainder of his work time taping club handles and keeping the pitch and putt course in shape. When he told Joe Lee about the job, he didn't elaborate. He simply said he was working at the golf course. Which golf course, she wanted to know. Several of the girls she'd waitressed with had told her there was more action in those places than at any 10 diners, and the men who went to those places couldn't afford to be cheap because they had a lot at stake. It isn't exactly a golf course, it's a pitch and putt place with a driving range, he said with a smile that would only look sheepish to her a month ago, but now only looks stupid. Oh, it's full-time days, said Hank proudly. When will we see each other? Hank felt touched by her need to see him. We'll work it out. Jolie was going to cry. She got up from the table and walked toward the bathroom. She wasn't sure why she'd left Tony anymore. Didn't seem to matter as much that he'd been a disgusting pig. Hank sat alone at the table, wondering how he'd failed to make her happy this time. He had no idea why doing what she wanted him to do had made her want to cry. Maybe it's because she wanted to be proud of him. And he'd gotten a job picking up used balls. She had gone with Hank because he wasn't a pig. There were things about him that made him different from any other man she'd ever known. And some of them were good things, but all of them had begun making her uncomfortable. She headed back to the table, thinking that she had to learn to adjust to him better. He was still sitting in the same position. She wondered why he never moved. Hank, do you want me to call in sick tonight and help you celebrate your new job? That would be really nice. How do you want to celebrate? We could go to a movie. He did so remind her of a little boy. I don't want you to move, Hank, she said, kneeling in between her legs. She ran her finger up his zipper. She took out his cock and kissed the top of it. Hank felt like he should be doing something. He hadn't even really wanted her to do this right now. But who was to say no to this kind of treatment? This is a present for getting your job, she said. She sucked his cock with a smooth, steady motion that put it all the way into her mouth. After about 5 minutes, Hank worried that he wasn't able to have an orgasm soon enough. There she was on her knees. And what would happen if he didn't make it work? He tried to stop thinking and concentrate on how it felt. Here we are, sitting in the kitchen, and Jolie is on her knees, giving me a great blowjob, he told himself. It should be wonderful. He repeated these things to himself for a long time. Finally, with the pain of the hardwood floor on her face, Jolie said, Do you want to fuck me, Hank? Hank was anxious on his first day of work. His boss, Joey, was a muscular man who was always spitting out ends of his cigar. He told Hank that starting him on a Saturday was like throwing him to the wolves, but that he had to learn the job sometime, and this way he would learn it quickly. This fucking job is as easy as shit, said Joey. But I want you sober when you're here, and be here when you're supposed to be here. I won't hesitate to kick your ass right out if I ever see you giving a customer a hard time. Hank said that he understood, extended his hand to shake on the deal. Joey looked at the hand from the back of his cigar, spit, took hold of it with a sneer on his face. That Saturday, Hank reported to work. Joey didn't say good morning or give him a chance to sit down and get his bearings straight. There's about 1,000 balls laying out there, and we're going to need some of them real soon. So get your ass moving on the Jeep. Hank walked off to the Jeep without answering. Hadn't been necessary to talk to him like that. The Jeep rattled loudly as he set it into motion. All he would have to do was crisscross the field and hold a straight line. It was easy. Hank lit his cigarette and began to relax. The first ball that hit the Jeep sounded like an explosion as it whacked off the door. Hank was jarred from a daydream where he was being served pressed duck and champagne by a naked Joe Lee, who was telling him what a good provider he was to make it possible for them to eat like this all the time. Hank wasn't sure where the explosion had come from. He stopped the Jeep, got out to look. Brad and Brian had each bought a bucket of balls for 75 cents. When Brian bounced his drive off the Jeep, he yelled, "Got it!" with a raised triumphant fist. Brad set himself with a look of determination. The bet was $5 for each time one of them could hit the Jeep or the ball harvester. Brad was concentrating on whacking his shot smoothly and with everything he had. He was just bringing his club back when Brian stopped him. "Wait a minute. What's the matter with you?" said Brad angrily. The jerk off driving the truck got out to see what was the matter when my shot hit. "It's got to be $5 if I could nail him," said Brad, gleeful. He didn't see the shot coming, but heard it land about 15 feet to his right. He started back to the truck. When the next shot whizzed over his head and crashed against the iron mesh that covered the side window, instinctively, Hank hit the dirt. Brian cracked up. "That's got to be worth something for making him fall down." When they saw Hank crawling back to the truck, they broke into new gales of laughter. "Look at that asshole," said Brad. When Hank got back into the truck, he was trembling, puffing. He was on a battlefield. He glared in the direction from the shots and saw the two boys laughing and pointing at him. He felt like a clown who sat on a bench over a vat of water. He grimaced deeply and put his head on his shoulder. He cried, "No one should have to be humiliated like this." What right did anyone have to degrade him like this? Why didn't people realize that he really wanted to be left alone? "You scared the shit out of him," said Brad. "Look, he doesn't even know how to get the truck started again. He's too busy pissing in his pants," said Brian. Hank felt tears dripping from his chin. He didn't know what was making him cry. What difference did it make? They were hitting golf balls at him. He was doing this to make Joe Lee happy. They would give 100 bucket of balls to have her for 5 minutes. If she could wait on drunks, he could do this. He was no better than anybody else. Hank wiped his eyes slowly and drove on, bravely. Ron was getting dressed for his second date with Rebecca when the call came from Hank. "Hey, man, where you been?" he said when he got the phone. "Nowhere," said Hank. Silence. Ron decided that he really didn't have much to say, and since Hank called, he must have something on his mind. Ron was determined to wait him out. He wasn't going to suggest that they get together, which is what usually happened. "Have you got any pot?" Hank finally managed to get out. A little, said Ron. He'd been able to buy a dime from Chris Galvin. Are you going to be doing anything later? Yeah, said Ron. I got a date. In fact, I was getting dressed when you called. Oh. Look, I'll probably be around tomorrow afternoon if you want to get together. That would be good, said Hank. Ron thought Hank's voice sounded funny. Something wrong, man? It would be better if we talked tomorrow. Wait, tomorrow's no good. I got to work. You got a job? Ron blurted. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I gotta tell you. There was a pathetic ring to Hank's voice that made Ron want to shove it away. He was finished riding around, getting stoned, and moaning about how bad everything was. He was going to start doing something about the way everything was. Hank wasn't part of it. He wanted to be able to travel at a pace that Ron intended to set. Look, call when you can. I gotta get going. I don't want to be late. Fine, said Hank quietly. Ron clicked down the phone without saying anything else. Just didn't have time right now. He didn't feel like hearing about how wonderful everything with Jolie was, or how it was all fucked up with her, or whatever it was with her. It didn't make a damn bit of difference in how the world was. Hank went to the kitchen cabinet and brought down a bottle of gin, took ice cube trays from the freezer and sat them next to a large glass. He dropped his pack of cigarettes on the table in front of the chair he'd chosen. He turned on the radio and let his mind pretend he was driving the loop. He visualized the turns and stops as he drank and smoked. After a while, he could even feel the bumpy parts of the road. It was a clear night, and he had had as much gas as he would need. He could make all the lights and stop signs work just the way he wanted them to. And if he had decided to get into an accident, there would be nobody there to tell him he'd made a mistake. Ron was a full 10 minutes early to pick up Rebecca. She answered the door and came out on the porch. Before he knew what she was doing, she put her arms around him and launched into a long kiss. He stared at her face. There was a pimple on her cheekbone that he hadn't noticed the night before. It was pointed right at his eyeball. Ron wondered if he popped it all of a sudden. He couldn't remember the last time he'd had a pimple, and he was sure he's only had about 5 of them in his life. He found them to be curious, and on occasion would make them a topic of conversation, but decided he was better off not mentioning this one. She was wearing super tight jeans and a flowered peasant shirt that sprouted sprays of roses at the neck. She had a long ribbon tied in her hair that bounced happily off the cheeks of her behind when she walked. What do you feel like doing? He asked on the way to his car. She couldn't help but notice the dent this time. Didn't mention it. I brought a movie sheet with me, but I'm not sure what's playing. Anything would be fine, said Ron. Can we do something else then? Like what? Let's drive until we don't know where we are. Let's find a diner and have coffee and talk. The idea of being lost didn't really appeal to Ron, but the rest sounded okay. He could pretend to be lost. She'd never know the difference. Which direction should I go in? Which one will get you lost the quickest? West, said Ron. At Ron's suggestion, they stopped and got a couple of containers for the rod. He showed her how to rip a small piece out of the lid so she could drink it in the car without spilling it. What a great idea, she said. Ron couldn't remember where he'd picked it up. He didn't like the idea of copping credit for something he hadn't really thought up, so he decided to make something up. My parents were divorced when I was really a little kid on Saturday or Sundays to get picked up by my dad. He fixed jukeboxes and pinballs for a living. Anyway, he would leave me in the car alone a lot. I used to watch people walking by and count cars. I felt like I could see everything, but that I wasn't really part of it, you know? Well, anyway, this one afternoon, I was sitting outside of a place he didn't think it was a good idea for me to be in. Sometimes I think he left me in the car when he was sick of listening to me. And I was watching this bunch of guys standing up against the wall outside the place my dad was in. A real slick-looking guy came around the corner in a long-sleeve silky shirt that didn't have a wrinkle on it. He'd just gotten a container of coffee, and I saw him do it. And I guess I've been doing it ever since. My father carries a thermos to work. Do you ever bring coffee with you to class? No, said Rebecca. I guess I just don't feel free enough to do that in a classroom setting yet. It depends on who your teachers are. They caught each other's eye and smiled. When Ron wanted to light a cigarette, Rebecca could see it in his face. She took his coffee container so he had a free hand. Ron moved deliberately and was pleased with his confidence. Things were going smoothly, and sometimes he even seemed coordinated. When they crossed over the Washington Reservation, Ron was comfortably lost. He knew that if he continued to work his way south, he would eventually get back to the highway. The conversation continued nonstop. Rebecca told Ron about how her parents weren't getting along because her father hit her brothers too much and made them help butcher the deer he sliced up for local hunters on the side. Neither of the boys wanted to do it, but the only choices were $15 for a day's work or nothing and get picked on for the rest of the week. Mr. Ranelli always said that he wanted his sons to know the meaning of a dollar. Ron said, "Let's turn up the heat and roll down the windows." "Why?" "I like the feeling of air, that sense of speed you can get with the windows down, and I don't want us to be cold." Ron watched him for some very long seconds. She wanted to kiss him, but he was driving. She moved closer on the bench seat. He smiled. She stared at his white teeth that seemed so straight. Her eyes followed the curve of his ear and the way his hair flopped over his collar. She saw a patch of skin on his neck that the razor had completely overlooked. She reached out to touch it. Ron wasn't sure what kind of a message he was getting from Rebecca when she stroked his neck. He had the instinctive idea that it meant something. Perhaps it didn't mean anything that big, but it couldn't be that bad either. "Are you comfortable?" he asked. "I'm not sure how comfortable you make me feel, but I enjoy being with you." Ron smiled, his dimple-showing grin, without planning it. "What I mean is, are you okay with the windows down?" "It's fine." After a couple minutes, I didn't notice anything different. "I wish I could find some place to stop the car." "Are you tired of driving?" "No, I want to concentrate on you instead of looking where I'm going." For a second, Rebecca felt sorry for Ron. Not that he wouldn't find a place to stop the car and make out with her. He was sure he'd work that out. But not wanting to think about where he was going was true of him on a whole different level. "Where do you want to go, Ron?" "Straight to your heart, or the vicinity around there." "Do you always try to make a joke out of things that bother you?" Ron wasn't sure what she meant, but he could be that way if she wanted him to. Sometimes it's funny, you know? You just gotta laugh to keep sane. Every time I take things for real, I get screwed. So, does that mean that you don't take me for real either? Ron felt a certain tension around him. He began talking without thinking. We're in this date situation, and sometimes I feel that everything we do or say has been all laid out for us already. And that's the way I think things are a lot of the time. It's in the way. Rebecca raised her eyebrows. In the way of what? You see what I mean? You just did it. We're playing this game that's all wrapped up in this boy-girl bit. What are we really going to find out about each other if we just fuck around? I don't think you have to put it quite like that. It's the way I really feel it. She paused. Maybe I'm just not being used to being talked to like that. Don't you see, said Ron? I feel like I just learned something real about you. Ron's mind felt sharp and alert for some reason that he didn't understand. He felt like he knew what he was talking about. He felt like the feeling and thought about how to pursue and elaborate on it. When I talk to you sometimes, I feel like I'm being interrogated or tested. I'm just curious about you. With a vengeance, she said. Ron felt like his face had been slapped. She hated him. She thought he was a slob. As he sulked, he allowed the words D-O-P-E and S-A-P to blink on his game show forehead. It's not that I don't like being with you. What's at all likable about what you've just described, said Ron, in a tone louder than anything else in her presence. He looked at her impatiently. What are you doing here, if you feel that way?